Hello. This week, we're talking payment solutions with a company that says it's building the bank of you. The business is called VPD Money, and I'm delighted to welcome its co-founder and CEO, Michael Simeon. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Charles. How are you doing? Thanks for having me here with your audience.
Thank you so much for doing this.
You're listening to CoinGeek Conversations with Charles Miller.
Michael, this is my first question. It's called VPD Money. What does VPD stand for?
Oh, Virtual Payment Digital.
Virtual Payment Digital, right.
Well, you will see tagline with VPD is what we call the bank of you. So it's actually the bank of you that we want to go for. But because we work in a regulatory environment, so we needed to get some approval before we can use the bank of you. So that's why we use
that. What's wrong? Why would the regulators not like the bank of you?
You know that when you just started out, you started out with strategic partnership. So until you get your own license, which we now require our own license now. You're not allowed to use anything that have a word bank in it.
So it's only now that
we've secured our lessons. Yeah, that's the difference.
Interesting. Right. Well, I must say I have signed up to the Bank of You, and it's very easy to sign up, and I've got it on my phone. One thing that, you know, well, let's just go through it. Let's say that I'm the typical customer. I've got my very bad photograph of me put in here. And now I have to put in my passcode, which I'm cleverly going to do without showing it on the screen so that nobody will be able to copy it. But now I've signed in. I have no money. So I don't need to be too worried about my security at this stage.
I will save you some.
Its default position is that it's going to be Nigerian currency, I think. Is that right?
Yes. No, so what we're doing, we're switching each territory on. Every time we finish the regulatory and compliance aspect, we switch that territory on. So far, we finish our regulatory and compliance aspects in Nigeria. So we are we're operational. Nigeria. We led the operation in Europe and America and a few other places.
Okay, so now this is interesting. So one of the things that I could do is fund by transfer. That's how I could get some money into my account. And I'm interested in this because it looks so straightforward. I've only got to fill in three things: the account number, the bank name, which is VPD Money, and my name. And then share those details. But I'm just a little puzzled because don't I need sort of like sort codes and all that kind of stuff? Is this really going to, if supposing I wanted to take it out of my own bank account, I don't think this would work, would it?
No, it will. So you have different channels where you can fund your account by transfer. You can fund your account with your card. We can fund your account with what they call USSD code, which is very popular in Africa. So effectively, you would generate, once we switch the UK aspect one, once we finish with the regulatory and all the things, what you'll be able to do, you'll be able to see us on the rail and you'll be able to transfer from your UK bank account into your VPD. But at the moment, we haven't switched that aspect up because we're still going through
the regulatory
process.
Yeah, sure. Right. So there'll be a little bit more, or it'll be customized for the UK.
Indeed.
Well, so this is another question then. I mean, there's a lot of talk of, banking the unbanked, and that phrase often crops up in relation to Africa. Yep. What I don't quite understand is, and so obviously you don't have to sign up for this. You don't have to go and visit your branch of your bank, but, if I have got a phone, could I not just sign up for any bank with online banking? How are you banking the unbanked in a way that older and more established banks are not able to do?
Thanks for that question. So what we've done with VPD Money is, you know, we let you build your home bank. We believe that most people don't like their banks, including myself.
Right.
It's true that bank gets in the way of things, in the way of people. People just want to get on with their lives and want to do all the necessary things that add value to them. So how do banks operate at the back end that let people actually do those things without getting in the way, without dragging them to the branch, without start to charge them their hands and leg for those services that's quite basic, let's be honest, in today's world. What we've done is the unbank is the last mile. For example, there's a town in Nigeria at the moment. That town, if they want to withdraw money, they have to travel almost 47 miles or kilometer, which is about 1 hour and 9 minutes away just to go and withdraw cash. Because they have to go to a branch. So we have partnership with other players where we push out POS machine. You will be able to withdraw from POS.
For people who are not up to speed on this, POS is point of service.
That's correct. Yes. You know, if you're in a village, there will always be someone who have POS machine there. And it's a business for that person as well as is an asset for you. So it's reducing that barrier to entry to have financial inclusion for everyone, really, because I believe that with financial inclusion, then we'll start be able to get data about you. And getting data about you, we'll now be able to know whether we can lend money to you.
So going back to the idea of for people living in a village, which is very remote, and there is a person in that village who is providing this POS service. Is that person appointed by you, or are they providing POS for many different businesses?
Yeah, they're providing POS for many businesses. So we just leverage, have a partner, we just leverage on that to extend that network.
Right.
To use existing network that you... I always believe a solution where you don't have to reinvent the wheel in the area. You concentrate in certain area where you have strength in. Then you now connect with the others in order to make sure you deepen the financial inclusion in the community.
So if I'm in the village and I've got some cash, I go to my local POS person, I show them my details on VPD money, and they say, here's some money, please transfer that into my account here, and then I'm in a position to send it wherever I want to send it. Is that sort of how it works?
That's correct. That's correct. It's as simple as that. There's nothing wrong with that. So you can deposit. The person will take the money from you, enter the sending to your VPD.
Right. And so what sort of economic sort of opportunities do you envisage that opening up for people who use that kind of a service?
It's huge. I mean, we're heavily data-driven company. The massive of economic activities that happen that's unrecorded is alarming. You know, you have people who are farmers who are doing massive, big turnovers, but they're still carrying those things in cash. You have artisans, that cocoa artisans, that doing, but they're still doing it in cash. And there's a cost to cash, and we're trying to reduce that cost so we don't need to be able to heavily depend on cash in all this community. In fact, all this area, and there are thousands of that in Nigeria, all this area, they are on tap, totally on tap. Because if you take, for instance, in Nigeria, the banking penetration is less than 20%. So they run into millions. On our own platform itself, we have about over 12,000 farmers that we haven't even started to look at how do we need to start, you know, deepening the financial experience for these people? How do we, what kind of solution that we need to, so they can benefit? We do, we need to do psychographic of each of our customer and be able to see how can we, you know, how can they benefit from our solutions.
Are you able to tell me what, how many customers you have at this stage?
Well, we have over 50,000 customers.
And are they pretty much all in Nigeria?
No. No. So we have three type of customers. So we have the diaspora customers. We have the SMEs. Then you have the unbanked and unserved.
So even now, VPD can be used for sending remittances internationally to Nigeria, right?
Yeah, right now at the moment, what you can do peer-to-peer with yourself, we have to switch on is Q1 next year that you will be able to now be able to do those remittances. At the moment, because our compliance, we've only finished with Nigeria at the moment. So, which means anyone who have a BVN is biometric verification number that they use in Nigeria, which contain all your biometrics. We have a way of authenticate, you know, or confirming that you are who you are. But if you don't have that, we give you access to the platform, but you can only see what you cannot really transact. Like yourself now, you've downloaded the, unless you're going to Nigeria, you will not be able to do anything at the moment until we switch on the other part.
So this, for the moment then, the operation for the diaspora people is that they have Nigerian funds, but they can simply operate them overseas.
That's correct. Or they have funds, let's say someone want to transfer funds from there, to be able to transfer into VPD and do all the payment bills, bill payment, subscriptions, all the necessary stuff that you do locally.
Right. Well, it seems like you've made incredible progress, because when did VPD start? It wasn't very long ago.
It wasn't very long ago. It's just going to 3 years in this. It's going to be 3 years in December. That was 2020 that we started, end of 2020, that we started. It's been a very incredible journey, but because we're experienced in payment space and in fintech space.
Yeah, I know that you're building on the experience you have, as an entrepreneur in this area, because you had a previous business that you started called Vogue Pay.
Indeed.
What was the difference between Vogue Pay and VPD then?
All right, okay. So Vogue Pay, we clubbed together with my other co-founder in 2012 to address the payment gap, because I don't know whether you recall at the time, some of the biggest players internationally, they excluded Nigeria and a few other African countries. So we saw that was unfair. We're like almost like activist type of approach, but we're very deliberate. And our success, we managed to help foster over 29,000 SMEs in Nigeria. We had over at the time before I exited successfully. We had over 100,000 merchants, and we were processing over, it's over 5 million, over 5 million, up to $5 million a day. So we're quite doing a lot of things. But even in Nigeria at the time, the regulations, they're not very familiar with fintech. So they had to work with us, everything. I have to work with us to say, all right, let's put regulatory things in place. Let's do. So there's quite a lot of experience you gain from that. And the danger set from Vogue Pay VocPay was a payment processing company. VPD is a digital banking experience that incorporates. You have your payment, you have your savings, you have your lending.
So it sounds like VocPay's customers were businesses, and VBD is, in a sense, a more ambitious idea because your customers are just people, of which there are many more.
Indeed. So VPD is a digital bank, new bank, with the different way of serving people, SMEs, and in this case, even some microfinance bank wants to ride on our own solutions.
Well, now the other thing I've seen that you are hoping to do is trying to what you say is I'm going to try and save everyone 20% of what they earn every month. Now that is going to be very, very popular and very successful if you can achieve it. But how is that going to work?
Yeah, so what we found is, especially with the way we arrange our technology, if you give access to certain data points and you're using our card, we would know, let's say, for example, right, you usually buy your bookstore from these particular shops. So that's bookshop. From my experience of from payment side, we know they have MID's code. MID's code is an identifier that would know what type of thing you're buying, what category. Then we have AI at the background that will search the other places and be able to say, oh, Charles, next time you want to X, Y, and Z, you can get it at a discount on this particular stuff. That's one aspect. The other aspect is we also go out. Let's say the telcos, for example, we go out to go and negotiate on behalf of our own customers. So at presently, the people are enjoying 3% off their every time they top up, they get 3% off. That 3%, it goes into what we call cash box, which they can unlock every 3 months. It just pile up in there. So it's a deliberate act to see how we can all succeed together, how we can help our customer, allow their money to go a bit further.
Right. Now, I know that you know a lot about the UK and you've lived in London and so on, and you went to university at Northumbria University in the north of England. I want to just ask you about the sort of cultural perceptions that you notice when you're in the fintech community in the UK or perhaps in the States as well. What are the things that people get wrong, would you say, about the business opportunities in Africa?
Yeah, I think that the first thing I notice that people get wrong in when they look at the business opportunity in Africa is, and I think that is understandable to some extent. I think people feel that the environment is chaotic or is not stable in terms of just from whether from their own news that they get. I've had people ask me that, oh, you're doing something in Northern Nigeria, what about the Boko Harams and this? And I said, well, if you're in Lagos and the where Boko Harams are and where you are is different. It's like from London, you live in London, someone's asking you what's happening in the Czech Republic. It's quite far. It's huge. And what with society, you have challenges. Then secondly, I also feel that when people dive down into what we're doing, they see the tech set we have, I think they get in a weird way, they get real shock that the things that is not uncommon to see African tech that have done so much work with little money, and than their counterpart which they've spent, because it's not also uncommon to when we start any startup, you don't expect to get paid for at least 2 years. You expect to be doing the work and getting things. And these are things that people find very hard to do abroad. You don't expect to get paid. You have to do the work. Nobody wants to invest in it if they haven't seen that you have all the battle hardened scar in terms of how to make sure we're extremely driven in terms of how we get things done. And the way people are consuming banking service and products has totally changed. And that's why we're trying to position ourselves, not only just in Africa, in Europe and America, but we're just moving one step at a time, pace by pace, with a well experience, and also to make sure that you have compliance. Your compliance is the key, because you can't build something on nothing. You have to build it so it can stand the test of time.
Well, I may be adding to one of those misperceptions about Africa with this question, but I'm wondering whether when you try to be compliant in Africa, you know most about Nigeria, I guess, is it complicated because the system of law is not completely defined, particularly, I mean, in many places around the world, it's not in relation to crypto, for instance, but I'm wondering whether that is an issue for you as to really finding out precisely what it is that you need to do in order to be compliant.
Yeah, I think you can. That would be true maybe 3 years ago or maybe 2 years ago. But for example, I know that in Nigeria, and I know that in a few other African countries, they've stepped up. In fact, they've leapfrogged in terms of rules, making sure it's wrong. But here's the thing, that rules can change quickly. So you have to have that flexibility, you have to build that predictability into your model.
I guess that is one of the advantages that a new business would have over a traditional business that's done the same thing the same way for decades.
Yes. Legacy, the traditional banks, they suffer from huge legacy problem because they have, you know, hundreds, thousands of branches to run. They have to run the security. They have to run the diesel to power the system. In fact, it can be profitable. So whereas people like us, we just have our own security, you know, in terms of cloud and all the necessary things that we have to have in place. And that's why we're passing all those benefits to our users.
We should probably stop in a minute, but I have one other thing that I just wanted to ask you about quickly, if I may, which is about the world of cryptocurrency. And yep. CoinGeek, where I work, supports Bitcoin SV, you probably know. How do you see those new kinds of digital money fitting into your banking system? Will they just integrate easily, or how complicated will that be?
All right, let me give you one fun fact. The way the fintech that exited successfully, where the first people that introduced crypto payment in Nigeria.
I saw that you were the first to introduce crypto payment capability into Nigeria in 2014, which is really extraordinary.
You know, we were expecting, you know, people to just use it to transfer money, to transfer to each other, using it. But what happened is a lot of Nigerians just buying their cryptos and storing it as a value against their own currency. So it was quite interesting. The regulatory authority, because they were not aware of what's this crypto, what kind of thing. It was just totally weird it was totally strange aspect to everybody. But, you know, when you really want to change things, sometimes you don't stay with status quo type of experience. You have to break things. You know, you have to break things. And that's what we break for others to ride on. And when others saw that we were doing, others just ride on that. We just want to try and take society forward. Now we're doing it on the larger scale, and that's why I'm across Africa.
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing, an incredible story. And I'm just so impressed at how much you've achieved so far in such a short time. But thank you so much for talking to me, Michael, and very good luck with your business, because it sounds fantastic.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thanks. Thanks for everything.
Thanks very much to Michael Simeon. Next week, we have a special festive show in which I'll be putting questions to Becky Leggero and Osman Callis in the return of the CoinGeek Conversations Christmas quiz. So please heat up the mulled wine and join us for that. But until then, thanks for listening. And from me, Charles Miller, goodbye.
Hey everybody, I'm Kurt Wooker Jr. Join us live on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you can ask me questions, comments, blessings, cursings, grapes, gripes, or gropes. You can catch us live across CoinGeek's YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and probably a whole bunch of other places too.
I think the big thing here, the big innovation, is the ordinals numbering system.
So utility is driven by this whole idea of springboarding us in terms of innovation by using micropayments and unlocking all these different new ways of doing things.
Decentralization, the meme, as people think of it, I don't think exists at all anywhere.
Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin wallet, blockchain, stablecoins, Metanet, the evolution of money. Everybody is talking about Bitcoin today, but what exactly is it? Learn the basics from experts. Learn what Bitcoin is, how it works, and why it matters. Blockchain 101, your ultimate guide to the fundamentals of blockchain.